Good day. Welcome to another episode of the Audible Local Ledger Reads to the Blind podcast. You can get more information at audiblelocalledger.org. Stay tuned for today's reading.
Hi, this is Daphne, and I am reading the Cape Cod Times for Thursday, March the 14th, 2024. We begin with the weather. Today, partial sunshine. Tonight, cloudy with rain and drizzle late, a high of 51, a low of 40. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly cloudy with a couple of showers, high of 54, low of 39. Saturday, times of clouds and sun, high of 49, low of 39. Sunday, a morning shower, then downpours, high of 51, low of 38. And Monday, partly sunny, a high of 51, a low of 34. Today, the sun rose at 6:54 and will set at 6:47, giving us 11 hours and 53 minutes of daylight or sunshine. And Sunday, the 14th of March, will be the first day that we have more than 12 hours of daylight. Even though it may be raining, the sun will still be there for more than 12 hours. And now for the lottery. The numbers game drawn yesterday, the 13th of March, the midday drawing was 4641. Again, midday drawing 4641. And the evening drawing numbers were 1592. Again, the evening drawing for the numbers game 1592. For mass cash drawn yesterday, the 13th of March, the numbers are 12, 22, 25, 31, and 34. Again, for mass cash, the numbers are 12, 22, 25, 31, and 34. For Powerball drawn yesterday, the 13th of March, the numbers are 21, 29, 54, 59, 62, with the Powerball of 4. Again, Powerball drawn yesterday, March the 13th. The numbers are 21, 29, 54, 59, 62, with the Powerball of 4. For Mega Millions, drawn on Tuesday, March the 12th, the numbers are 2, 16, 31, 57, 64, with the Mega Ball of 24. Again, for Mega Millions, drawn on Tuesday, March the 12th, the numbers are 2, 16, 31, 57, 64, with a Mega Ball of 24. And for Megabucks, drawn yesterday, the 13th of March, the numbers are 5, 16, 22, 27, 37, and 44. Again, for Megabucks, drawn yesterday, the 13th of March, the numbers are 5, 16, 22, 27, 37, and 44. And finally, Lucky for Life, drawn Wednesday, the 13th of March, the numbers are 27, 43, 44, 45, 47, with a lucky ball of 18. Again, for Wednesday, March the 13th, Lucky for Life, the numbers are 27, 43, 44, 45, 47, with a lucky ball of 18. And on to the news. For the front page of the Cape Cod Times for Thursday, March the 14th, our top-level article today is entitled Duck Harbor Flooding Closes Roads in Wellfleet. And there are two striking pictures. The first one is entitled Pamet Point Road Near Bound Brook Island in Wellfleet Flooded shown here on Tuesday. After a combination of coastal flooding and robust high tides on Sunday pushed water into the area via the overwash at Duck Harbor, the road remained flooded on Wednesday. And the picture makes it look like there's just a stream running through the wilderness there. No road. And the second picture underneath that shows a picture of a road disappearing underwater. And the caption is, a section of Bound Brook Island Road on Wellfleet remained closed on Monday. This is an article written by Eric Williams. Roads in the Bound Brook Island area of Wellfleet remained closed Wednesday after coastal flooding on Sunday pushed water inland from the overwash area at Duck Harbor. The road closures stymied the back route from Wellfleet Center to Truro Center, leaving Route 6 as the only alternative for vehicle travel. The closures also made road travel to Bound Brook Island difficult or impossible without a specialized vehicle. Similar flooding and road closings occurred in January when Wellfleet firefighters helped a Bound Brook Island resident and her dog off the island by boat. On Tuesday morning, a short section of Poldike Road was closed and underwater, where Poldike Creek typically flows under the road. Farther north, about a third of a mile of Bound Brook Island Road leading into Pamet Point Road was also closed. The water appeared to be more than a foot deep in places. The flooded sections are about a mile away from Duck Harbor. According to information provided by the Cape Cod National Seashore, overwashes, quote, were first observed at Duck Harbor in January 2021, close quote. The overwashes have continued regularly since then on robust high tides, a dynamic that is more significant when the high tides are combined with coastal storms and coastal flooding. An overwash is when water and sediment, driven by storms, breach the crest of a dune or a beach. The continuing overwashes at Duck Harbor, quote, are the result of rising sea levels in Cape Cod Bay, close quote, according to the Cape Cod National Seashore, and not associated with the Herring River Salt Marsh Restoration Project that is ongoing nearby. Saltwater intrusion from an overwash killed vegetation in a forested area behind Duck Harbor Beach. The seashore and Ducks Unlimited partnered on a project to remove the dead vegetation from a roughly 120-acre area to, quote, restore conditions favorable for salt marsh vegetation, according to a release from the seashore. Almost immediately, quote, salt marsh plants began to recolonize Duck Harbor, close quote, after the overwashes began, according to the seashore. Our next article from the front page of the Cape Cod Times is entitled, Grocery Prices Outpacing Inflation. And this is reported by Alexander Coolidge for the Cincinnati Enquirer. If you think food inflation at the supermarket since the COVID-19 pandemic is just bananas, it's not. Bananas, averaging 62 cents a pound in January, have stayed relatively cheap. But as of January, the overall cost of groceries is 24.7% higher than it was in March 2020, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The overall price of food has risen so high it has outpaced the 20% rise of overall inflation since the pandemic outbreak nearly 4 years ago. As consumers struggle to pay for it all, grocery inflation has become a hot political issue. In January, President Joe Biden accused companies of ripping people off by keeping prices high even after many food costs have begun to level off or come down in recent months. Last week, Biden announced a, quote, strike force to crack down on unfair and illegal pricing by corporations that may be violating the law and keeping prices high, close quote, including the food and grocery sector. Consumers, the president, and even Cookie Monster are upset about side effects such as, quote, shrinkflation, in which food manufacturers package everything from cookies to potato chips in smaller bags or boxes to obscure the higher prices. Perhaps sensing the sour national mood, Cincinnati-based Kroger reiterated its promise to lower food prices if the supermarket giant is successful in winning federal approval for its proposed $25 billion takeover of the rival Albertsons. Unconvinced, federal officials sued days later, saying the deal could mean still higher prices for consumers. Quote, "People notice these things in the same way they notice gas prices, and it matters for their sense of how well the economy is doing," close quote, said Catherine Kramer, a political science professor at the University of Madison of Wisconsin in Madison. How bad is food inflation at the supermarket? There's not a single food item out of more than 100 closely tracked and seasonally adjusted at the supermarket that's gotten cheaper since March 2020, according to federal data. The food that has risen the least since the pandemic? Tomatoes, which are 1.1% more expensive, currently averaging $2.15 per pound nationwide, than bananas, which are 4.6% more expensive in the past 4 years. If the breadth of inflation depresses you, you could always have a drink. Wine purchased for the home consumption was the third least affected by runaway prices, up 5.9%, followed by liquor, up 7.2%. Skip the beer, though. That rose 15%. The two broad categories of food that were most inflation-resistant in the past 4 years were fruits and vegetables, which rose 17.9%, and dairy-related products, which rose 19.1%, lower than the rates of both supermarket inflation and overall inflation. There's good news and bad news about eggs. While egg prices have dropped the most in the past year, 28.6% cheaper than at the start of 2023, they're still 35.6% higher than at the start of the pandemic. Egg prices peaked in January 2023, up 89.8%, nearly double what they were in March 2020. Nationally, the price for a dozen eggs averaged $2.52 in January, after soaring above $4 a dozen in the past 2 years amid an avian flu epidemic. The current reigning champion of most inflated grocery item, however, is not that far away in the dairy case. Margarine is 54.1% more expensive than 4 years ago. Manufacturers have blamed the war on Ukraine, previously a major agricultural producer, for disrupting the world's commodity markets, including sunflower and soybean oils. Until the latest data from January, overall food prices were beginning to level off, and many individual items became a little cheaper. New inflation data to be reported mid-March will reveal if prices are flaring up again or if January was a one-off upward blip. Federal officials predict overall food prices will keep climbing, but at a much slower rate, up 1.6% in 2024, versus 5% in 2023, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Price Outlook. Our next front page article from the Cape Cod Times for Thursday, March the 14th, is entitled SEC Allegations Against Falmouth Financial Advisor to Go to Trial. This is reported by Denise Coffey. A trial in the civil case brought by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission against Jeffrey Cutter and Cutter Financial Group of Falmouth could begin later this year or early next year, according to an attorney representing the defendants. a motion to dismiss the lawsuit against Qatar and the company was denied in December in U.S. District Court in Boston. Qatar, 55, has been a financial advisor since 2005. He founded Qatar Financial Group in 2017. He is also a licensed insurance agent in Massachusetts. Qatar attorney Ian Rothman declined to comment Tuesday on the outcome of the motion. In an interview last year, Rothman said the federal agency is holding Qatar Financial to a standard above and beyond what's required in the industry in terms of disclosure. A 22-page complaint against Qatar and his company was filed March 17, 2023. The federal agency alleges Qatar and his company engaged in fraud, deceit, and deliberate disregard of regulatory requirements that cost substantial losses to their clients, according to court documents. Losses for seven clients amounted to at least $640,000, according to allegations by the SEC. The denial of a motion to dismiss generally is not unusual, according to the American Bar Association. It's a standard course of action for courts to assume that allegations in a complaint are true, rather than an indication that the court agrees with the complaint. The denial means the case will move forward. The motion to dismiss lays out the arguments that will be used when a jury trial begins. The SEC lawsuit alleges that the defendants violated the Investment Advisors Act, a federal law governing the acts of investment advisors, according to the Qatar motion to dismiss. The SEC alleges the defendants didn't disclose the conflict of interest between their work as investment advisors and insurance agents, that their fiduciary duties to investment clients was breached, and that deceptive practices brought in bonuses and fees on insurance products that were sold. On Qatar's behalf, the motion to dismiss claimed that all federal laws were abided by when providing investment advice, and all state laws were followed when selling insurance products. The defendants also claimed in the motion to dismiss, that the SEC has no jurisdiction in this case, and that all state insurance regulations were followed. Further, Massachusetts insurance regulations impose no fiduciary duty on insurance agents, defendants claimed in the motion. They said that Massachusetts insurance regulations require disclosure of fact, not amount of compensation. The motion, on behalf of the defendants, calls into question the use of the Investment Advising Act to police insurance sales and service. As of 2022, Qatar Financial Group claimed to manage approximately $134 million in client assets across 430 clients, most of whom were individual retail investors of retirement age, according to court documents. The SEC alleges clients were advised to spend one-third of their assets on fixed index annuities, an insurance product, and in some cases that they purchased new annuities before surrender periods were complete. Such actions come with fee penalties. Qatar did recommend some new annuity products with better features for some clients, Rothman said, adding that the products have been performing well. The lawsuit mentioned eight clients, referring to them as A through H. In one case, a client had to pay, quote, a substantial capital gains tax adversely affecting the client's Social Security benefits, close quote, despite this client's concerns and his wishes not to sell securities without his permission, according to court documents. Rothman said he intends to litigate the case one client at a time. And our final article from the front page of the Cape Cod Times is entitled, House Passes Bill That Could Ban TikTok, and this is reported by Riley Began and Ken Tran. The House approved a bill Wednesday that would force TikTok's parent company to sell the juggernaut social media app or face a practical ban in the U.S. The bill cleared the House with strong bipartisan support, 352-65, with one member voting present. President Joe Biden has said he would sign the legislation if it makes it to his desk. However, its fate is uncertain in the Senate, where it has proved much more divisive. The legislation's proponents argue the app, immensely popular with teens and young people for its customized song and dance features on short clip videos, poses national security risks. TikTok parent company ByteDance is based in Beijing and may expose American user data to Chinese government surveillance. Last year, the Biden administration prohibited TikTok on devices issued by the federal government. Some states, municipalities, and public universities have done the same. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, said TikTok is actively undermining our economy and security, close quote. The bill would make TikTok unavailable in app stores or web hosting services, effectively making it unavailable to U.S. users, unless it severs ties with ByteDance within 180 days. For its part, TikTok says it stores all American user data in a U.S.-based entity, and the storage is solely managed by the company's U.S.-based security. Their efforts, however, have evidently done little to alleviate lawmaker concerns. TikTok launched an intense lobbying campaign ahead of the House vote, urging its users to call their representatives and urge them to vote against the law. The company's CEO, Xiao Chu, also visited Capitol Hill on Tuesday in an effort to persuade lawmakers, mainly senators, to oppose it. Former President Donald Trump waded into the debate as well. He came out against the bill and posted on Truth Social, his social media app, quote, "If you get rid of TikTok, Facebook and Zucker Schmuck will double their business," referring to, close quote, referring to Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Facebook, he wrote, is a, quote, "true enemy of the people," close quote. In an interview with CNBC on Monday, Trump added that he does believe TikTok is a national security threat, but that a lot of young people would, quote, "go crazy without it," close quote. The bill was fast-tracked to the House floor after it was approved by the powerful House Energy and Commerce Committee last week by a unanimous vote of 50-0, a stunning, unusual sight for the lower chamber. As bipartisan as the bill's support was, the effort still received pushback from lawmakers who say an effective ban on the app would limit freedom of expression. Representative Robert Garcia, Democrat from California, along with a handful of other progressive lawmakers, held a news conference Tuesday with TikTok content creators, warning against an effective ban. Noting the app's use as a platform for small businesses, Garcia said, quote, "Any ban on TikTok is not just banning the freedom of expression. You are literally causing huge harm to our national economy," close quote. The upper chamber has been less bullish about the legislation. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, has not said whether he would bring the House's bill up for a vote, explaining he would have to confer with committee chairs. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, the top Republican on the Commerce Committee, said he has deep concerns about TikTok, but said he hasn't looked at the House bill yet. While most senators agree that TikTok's Chinese parent company poses a security threat to the United States, many have concerns about the legality of singling out one company. Senator Maria Cantwell, Democrat from Washington, the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, said Wednesday she's not sure what her company would do once the House passed the bill. The committee has been, quote, working on this issue diligently for a while, close quote, with the goal of finding a tool that could stand up to legal scrutiny. Quote, the whole point here is you have a dilemma. You want free speech, but you also want the United States to have some ability to protect U.S. citizens or U.S. military from foreign actors who might be deleterious in what they would be using as a tool of communication, close quote, she said. Trump attempted to ban TikTok when he was president, but it was blocked by courts for failing, quote, to adequately consider an obvious and reasonable alternative, close quote, a federal judge wrote at the time. Other senators think other solutions could better tackle the issue. Quote, my concern is that if you try to deal with this by name, you're playing a game of whack-a-mole, close quote, Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas. Quote, because what's TikTok today will come up next week as Toktik or Tic-Tac or whatever, close quote. Some lawmakers are insisting proposing Virginia Senator Mark Warner's Restrict Act, which has bipartisan support and would allow the Commerce Department to further regulate foreign social media apps. Warner, who chairs the Senate Intelligence Committee, said Tuesday he thinks it's, quote, good news that the House was poised to pass the bill, but, quote, I have some different ideas. Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, said Monday he would block speedy passage in the Senate because it, quote, violates the First Amendment rights of 180 million Americans, adding, in a free country, you don't take people's companies, close quote. Others have said they're strongly supportive of any effort to block TikTok. Quote, I think if you get it to a vote, it's hard to vote no on, Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri, who supports the House bill and banning TikTok generally, said on Monday, quote, but I think there will be a fierce effort to prevent any vote, close quote. We're nearing the middle of our broadcast, and so let's go to the obituaries. There are six today. The first is Newton Froelich. Longtime Wellfleet resident, historical novelist, and lawyer Newton Froelich, 87, died on March 6, 2024, accompanied lovingly by his wife of 62 years, Martha, his son Jim, his daughter Nina, and his son-in-law, Moy. Newton and Martha have had a deep connection to Cape Cod ever since they bought their home in Wellfleet in 1965. Newton was born and raised in New York City in 1936 to parents May and William Froelich. While his father, an attorney, served as senior advisor for economic affairs to the U.S. military government in 1948, Newton, his older brother Edward, and his parents resided in post-war Berlin, an experience that affected him deeply for the rest of his life. Newton received a unique Ford Foundation scholarship to attend college at the age of 16. He graduated from Columbia University in 1955 and from Columbia Law School in 1958. Newton married Martha Jane Levin in Washington, D.C. in 1962 and went on to build a successful law practice there, focusing on real estate and family law. In 1971, Newton published Making the Best of It, a Common Sense Guide to Negotiating a Divorce, Harper & Row, to wild acclaim. He also interviewed and toured with renowned family therapist Carl Whitaker and taught law at Catholic University. In 1972, Newton left law practice to write and engage in historical research. He first moved with his wife and children to the south of France, where he began to write historical fiction and worked as a legal consultant for the Erkelitschen Real Estate Development Group. From 1973 to 1976, Newton and his family lived in Wellfleet, while Martha pursued graduate studies in musicology at Harvard University. In 1976, the family relocated to Jerusalem and later to Savion, Israel. In 1990, Newton published 1492, a novel of Christopher Columbus, the Spanish Inquisition, and A World at the Turning Point, by St. Martin's Press, 1990, revised edition, Bluebird Press, 2016. He also practiced law in Israel with the firm of Shraga Biran and later worked in public relations for the Israel-based medical technology firm Elsincht. While living in Israel, Newton devoted most of his time to the international search for the American Israeli missing soldier, Zachary Baumel, captured in the 1982 Israel-Lebanon War. In 2000, Newton and Martha returned to live in Wellfleet, where he continued to write, research, and travel, publishing The Shakespeare Mask in 2015, Bluebird Press, a novel addressing the authorship mystery surrounding William Shakespeare. Newton recently completed Washington and Will, a novel based on the complex relationship between George Washington and his slave, Will. Newton was known for his love of history, keen intellect, wicked humor, and gregarious nature. A natural-born raconteur, he was always eager to discuss the newest theatrical and literary releases, Jewish history, the Crusades, Shakespeare's origins, Revolutionary-era North America, and current event and politics, both local and international. Newton and his wife, a classical pianist, loved to travel and attend concerts, operas, and theater performances together. Newton Froelich is survived by his wife, Martha, their two children, Nina and Jim, his son-in-law, Moy, and their four grandchildren, Mia, Leah, Leo, Tessa, and Sasha, all of whom loved him very much. Our next obituary is for Michael R. Gross. Michael Raymond Gross, 72, of Mashpee, passed away at Tufts Medical Center after a brief illness on March 11, 2024. He was the beloved husband of Barbara Henderson Gross. Born January 6, 1952, to Raymond E. and Esther Proctor Gross of Auburn, Maine, his family relocated to coastal Maine area. Michael graduated from Rockland District High School in 1970 and University of Maine, Orono, and received his B.A. in journalism in 1974. He had a love of both music and media. While still in high school, Michael hosted a weekly radio show at WRKD, comprised mostly of music and news. Following graduation, Michael held various media positions while in Maine, such as Public Relations Association, Penobscot Bay Medical Center, Program Director, WRKD, State House Reporter, WABK, Alumni Development and Fundraiser, Hinckley School. In 1995, Michael moved to Massachusetts, becoming Director of Communications at Cape Cod Community College, from which he retired in 2018. During his career, Michael won many career awards. In 1989 and repeated in 1993, he won the ACE, Association for Communication Excellence, Superior Award in Special Publications category in the National Critiques and Awards competition. He also won Communicator of the Year in 2003 from the National Council of Marketing and Public Relations. His second love was music. As a lifelong singer, he was selected for 4 years as a high school all-state chorus tenor soloist. Michael participated in many and varied musical experiences and went on to become a competition barbershop tenor. Drums were a life focus for Michael. Trained as a percussionist, he distinguished himself as a talented musician. As he progressed and perfected his hand, he could play and read any music style, such as jazz, swing, and big band. Always one to share his love of music, he worked with Barnstable High School Drama Club, whether playing in the pit or musically directing productions. Michael had a lifelong love of baseball. He opened his home to many a Catuit Kettleer and Falmouth Commodore, both players and interns. He and Barbara cherished their relationships with their summer sons and daughters. In addition to his wife, Barbara Turner Gross, he is survived by his sons, James Gross and wife Maria, David Gross and Jenna, his stepchildren, Catherine Turner and fiancé Joseph McIsaac, and William Turner, his sister, Martha A.G. Hawley, a granddaughter, an uncle, cousins, and nephews. A visitation will be held in Chapman Funerals and Cremations, 74 Algonquin Avenue, Route 151, Mashpee, on Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. A funeral service will be celebrated on Thursday, March 21st, 2024, in Chapman Funerals and Cremations at 11 a.m. Burial will follow in Great Neck Wood Cemetery in Mashpee. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Cape Cod Community College Foundation, https://cccfoundation.org/donate. For online guest book and directions, please visit www.chapmanfuneral.com. Our next obituary is for Michael S. Besley. Michael S. Besley, 61, of Holliston, passed away suddenly on March 6, 2024. Michael was born in Spokane, Washington, to Christine and Zenas Besley, who predeceased him. Mike grew up in Worcester and graduated from Doherty Memorial High School. He was a certified medical assistant at the Brigham and Women's Urgent Care Center in Foxborough, having worked for Mass General Brigham for more than 20 years. He was a proud Marine veteran who often celebrated his service to our country. Mike was also an enthusiastic Boston sports fan, expert historian, and avid gardener. He devoted many hours volunteering service to his community and was a member of the Mount Hollis Lodge. He is survived by his sons, Derek Besley, and his fiancée, Amber Hoisington of Dennisport, and Tyler Besley of South Yarmouth. He leaves behind his two sisters, Robin Johnson and Cindy Fanning, brother-in-law Bob Fanning, all of Worcester, as well as his brother-in-law, Timothy Duffy, of Ogunquit, Maine. He also was a loving uncle to Daniel Johnson and Courtney and Jared Duffy. He was predeceased by his beloved sister, Kate Duffy. A private burial at the National Cemetery in Bourne will be planned for a later date. Memorial donations may be made in his honor to the Pancreatic Cancer Network at pancan.org, a charity dear to his heart, or to Brigham and Women's Hospital. Excuse me, that's Brigham and Women's Hospital at give.brighamandwomens.org for his many years of service. Our next obituary is for Verlin O. Ward, Jr. Verlin Otis Ward, Jr., 77, of Mashpee, Massachusetts, died peacefully surrounded by loved ones on Friday, March the 8th, 2024, at Cape Regency Rehabilitation. Please see www.tiernyfuneralhome.com for funeral details. And that's spelled T-I-E-R-N-E-Y, funeral home, all one word. Our next obituary is for Jean-Bernard Sagesse. Jean-Bernard Sagesse, 57, of South Dennis, Mass., passed away unexpectedly on March 1st, 2024. He was the loving son of the late Françoise Cazot and Saint-Claire Sagesse. Jean Bernard, officially known by his family, friends, and community as J.B., was born and raised in Kenskoff, Haiti. When his father passed, he graciously took the responsibility of raising his siblings with his mother, Françoise. His sense of responsibility, kindness, and compassion stayed with him throughout his young life. J.B. was a system administrator at Cape Cod Hospital for 26 years and realtor at Seaport Village Realty in Hyannis for 15. He was described by one of his associates as always friendly, welcoming, and kind in his approach. J.B. had an infectious smile. His presence and positive energy would fill the room. He had a kind heart and immensely enjoyed helping people. He was a leader, counselor, friend, and valued the potential of each person he met, offering emotional, spiritual, or practical support without expecting anything in return. Jean Bernard was greatly loved by his family and will be deeply missed by all who knew him. He is survived by his sisters, Bernadette Sagesse and her husband, Joseph Romola of Ottawa, Canada, Marie-Michelle Sagesse and Marie-Nicole Sagesse, and her husband, John Abner Bellius of Toronto, Canada, his daughter, Megan Tracy Sagesse, and his son, Jonathan Sagesse. He's also survived by his sister's children, whom he considered his own, Jimmy Tyler Romella, Shana Sarah Lynn Romella, Shirley Ann Bellius, Nisha Abby Bellius, Michael Andrew Desir, Matthew Desir, and Michaela Tessa Desir. Jean Bernard survived also for his uncles and aunts, Jean-Claude René, Marie-Thérèse, Dula and Mercedes Sagesse, and several cousins. In addition to his parents, Jean Bernard is predeceased by his sister, Michaela Sagesse. Visiting hours will take place Saturday, March 16, 2024, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Dennis Church of the Nazarene, 209 Upper County Road in South Dennis, immediately followed by a funeral service. Burial to follow, Chandler Gray Cemetery in West Yarmouth. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Heart Center PC, 52 Park Street, Hyannis, Mass., 02601. For online condolences or to share a memory, visit https://www.doanebealamesHyannis.com. And that's DoaneBealames Hyannis.com. Our final obituary for today is for Angeline Bernhardt. Angeline Bernhardt, née Schumacher, died peacefully at 5:55 p.m. on Thursday, March 7, 2024, at Benchmark Senior Living at Plymouth Crossings. Independent to the last, she slipped away in the seconds when those sitting vigil stepped out. Angie was born on December 26, 1939, on the family farm in Hague, North Dakota. She traveled a tremendous distance in her life, following her husband, Herman Bernhardt, to his Air Force postings in Florida, Pennsylvania, Newfoundland, and Cape Cod. Angie and Herb lived both separately and together, leading her to develop deep friendships with communities on the Cape, in Plymouth, Mass., and in Lincoln, New Hampshire. Throughout her life, she made nearly annual trips home to North Dakota for family reunions. Angie lived for her family. She sent cards for, literally, every holiday, always picked up the phone, and traveled to visit children, grandchildren, and her great-grandchild across the United States and Europe. She always opened her door to family and friends. We all remember her fixing our favorite meals and then diligently shuttling us to local attractions. Angie was always busy. She loved cooking and annually prepared homemade tortellini and sausage. She sewed cushions and curtains to adorn new homes and was always ready to hem pants or make last-minute clothing alterations for her loved ones. Angie was an accomplished human resources professional at the Jordan Hospital and sold long-term health insurance. During her unexpected hospitalizations at Jordan in later life, she would provide her nursing team with detailed insights about hospital operations from her bed. Angie is predeceased by her husband, Herman Bernhardt, her sister, Pauline Jangula, and her brother, Joe Schumacher. She is survived by her children, Anita Bernhardt and Alexander Bernhardt, their spouses, Benjamin Marcus and Allison Bernhardt, her grandchildren, Hannah Marcus, Nathan Marcus, Jake Bernhardt, Paige Bernhardt, and Mackenzie Bernhardt, and their partners, Morgan McLeod, Mara Carmen, and Molly Stevens, and her great-grandchild, Simon McLeod. She is also survived by her siblings, Mary Gaffreau, Mark Shoemaker, Millie Hudson, Sally Buswell, and Vicki Lange. The family will hold a private burial at Plymouth County Cemetery in Plymouth, where she will be laid to rest beside Herman Bernhardt. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Alzheimer's Association or the Sisters of Mercy. More news from the Cape Cod Times. About 600 Family Dollar Tree stores to close. This is reported by Cheryl McLeod for the USA Today Network. Family Dollar will be closing about 600 stores over the first half of 2024. Another 370 Family Dollar stores and 30 Dollar Tree stores will close over the next several years as leases expires, according to an announcement Wednesday. No specifics on which stores will be closed has been released. Family Dollar has more than 8,000 stores across 49 states and was bought by Dollar Tree in 2015 for $8.5 billion, according to the data company Scrape Hero. Dollar Tree, a Fortune 200 company, operated 16,774 stores across 48 states and five Canadian provinces as of February the 3rd. Stores operate under the brands of Dollar Tree, Family Dollar, and Dollar Tree Canada. Quote, "We finished the year strong with fourth quarter results reflecting positive traffic trends, market share gains, and adjusted margin improvements across both segments," said Rick Dreiling, chairman and CEO. "While we are still in the early stages of our transformation journey, I am proud of what our team accomplished in 2023 and see a long runway of growth ahead of us. As we look forward in 2024, we are accelerating our multi-price rollout at Dollar Tree and are taking decisive action to improve profitability and unlock value at Family Dollar." Consolidated net sales increased 11.9% to $8.63 billion, the company said in its report for its fourth quarter results for fiscal year 2023, but the operating loss was $1.89 billion. Net loss was $1.71 billion. Cape Codders can answer state clean energy survey through Friday. This article is reported by Heather McCarran. As a new state committee focused on clean energy debates its purpose, Barnstable officials and others have been sharing their opinions by way of a survey and letters. The Commission on Clean Energy Infrastructure Siting and Permitting was created in September by Governor Maura Healey through an executive order to provide recommendations for reforms, quote, "to remove barriers to responsible clean energy infrastructure development," quote, which the administration says is frequently delayed by siting and permitting challenges. The panel, which has been developing possible recommendations since October, is tasked with, quote, "reducing permitting timelines, ensuring committees have input in the siting and permitting of clean energy infrastructure, and ensuring that the benefits of the clean energy transition are shared equitably," close quote. Barnstable Town Manager Mark Ells said recommendations on changes to the existing permitting and siting procedures are expected by March 31st in his most recent town manager communications to the state town council. Town officials have been particularly disappointed that Barnstable, with, quote, firsthand knowledge about siting and permitting of offshore wind facilities, hasn't had a seat on the state panel in spite of many requests, said Ells. Quote, it's inexcusable that we're not sitting at the table, quote, Ells said. Senator Julian Sear, Democrat from Truro, on Tuesday, said he and State Representative Kip Diggs, Democrat Barnstable, have also pressed for Barnstable to be a direct participant. Quote, we have elevated those requests several times, ideally for the town of Barnstable to have a seat on the commission, and at least for the town to be able to participate as a stakeholder, close quote, he said. That effort continues. Quote, why is this of special interest? Because by streamlining the permitting process, they may centralize the authority to make decisions on permitting, Ells said. And unless communities that are impacted by this are involved and can make these decisions for themselves, somebody else will be making decisions for them. And we said, in the public comment, we do not agree with that, close quote. According to the commission, multiple proposals are under consideration, though the body, quote, has not yet coalesced around any concrete proposed reforms, close quote. The purpose of the survey, the board notes on its webpage, is to summarize the key issues that have been discussed to date and seek feedback on specific questions of interest to the commission. The commission is weighing the creation of a single consolidated permit, with all local and state permits, quote, considered in a single proceeding, conducted by a single consolidated state permitting agency, close quote. According to the commission, under such a plan, state and local officials would still take part in the consolidated process, quote, after having conducted their own fact-finding processes with the applicant and the public, close quote. They would each file advisory opinions with the consolidated state permitting agency, quote, which would rely heavily on such entities' particular expertise, close quote, the commission notes in one of its survey sections. Ells told the town council that he is leery of the idea, quote, in general, I do not agree with the approach to try to streamline this in a way that does not engage, certainly, the municipalities and, certainly, a municipality that has direct impact, he said. Another idea outlined in the survey suggests creating, quote, site suitability zones, close quote, which would be determined using pre-screening tools, quote, to identify the environmental impacts that a project may have in a certain area and inform siting decisions as well as local and state permitting processes, close quote. Barnstable residents, who've been following the offshore wind issue closely, are also raising questions about the commission's directive. They are urging those who have not done so already to go through the survey. Quote, the survey questions will give you a good idea about where Massachusetts policy is headed vis-a-vis energy infrastructure siting, as well as the permitting reforms the governor and her team will seek to put into effect to accomplish their goals. Close quote. Hector Gunther, member of the Save Greater Dowses Beach Steering Committee, said in an email. Critics believe reforms, quote, if enacted by legislation, executive order, or regulatory fiat, will upend a long history of local control by Massachusetts cities and towns over zoning and permitting decisions, close quote, he said. There is still an opportunity to participate in the survey or to comment by email, but the window will close after Friday, that's tomorrow. The survey is composed of 11 sections, each with multiple questions, seeking comment about ways, quote, to balance the need for accelerating the responsible deployment of clean energy, meaningful community engagement, and an equitable clean energy transition, close quote, all with an eye toward meeting the emissions limits outlined in the state's Clean Energy and Climate Plan. To complete the Commission's survey, visit tinyurl.com/Energy Commission Survey. And to submit written comments, email CEISP@Massachusetts.gov. And just a snippet from a sports article about boys basketball. Bourne advances to first state title game, reported by Courtney Jacobs. The March Madness tournament for college basketball may not start until next week, but the Massachusetts Interscholastic Athletic Association, MIAA, high school basketball state tournament is nearing a close. Win or go home. That was the mentality for the boys basketball Division IV Final Four matchup between number 6 Burke and number 2 Bourne on Tuesday. One team would play for a state title while the other's season would end. The scene was set at Bridgewater Renham High School as the gym was packed out with many standing around the court to watch. Bourne wasn't ready to go home just yet. The team defeated Burke 70-60 to advance to its first state championship game in program history. Wins like this are a team effort, and it's easier when you have a team of scorers, including Leo Andrade, 26 points, Mike Dankert, 23 points, and Nate Reynolds, 14 points. We got guys that can step up, Bourne head coach Scott Ashward said. And that's exactly what the trio did. That's all we have time for today. This is Daphne. I have been reading the Cape Cod Times for March 14th, 2024. Lest I forget, Happy Pi Day.